Vice presidents never get to go anywhere.
Joe, come on. You should be proud of what you did on Meet the Press. You're a great vice president, Joe.
Well, you know, some people say I'd make a great president. All right, better than you even.
That's Jason Sudeikis, Saturday Night Live's send-up of Vice President Joe Biden. When President Obama is sworn in for his second term next week, politicos will be well into projecting the 2016 presidential race. A public policy poll released last week shows Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie as frontrunners. Why no Amtrak Joe? Biden worked out a last-minute deal with the GOP on fiscal policy. He's in charge of a high-profile gun policy review that will be presented publicly this week. And he's got foreign policy chops and knows how Washington works. Steve Kornacki is senior political writer for Salon.com and co-host of MSNBC's The Cycle. He wrote about Washington's forgotten man for Salon. Steve, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me, Virginia.
So Joe's been on a bit of a roll lately. How would you characterize his role altogether as a vice president?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the more consequential vice presidencies we've seen, you know, in the modern era. It's an office that's sort of been in search of an identity really since the birth of the republic. I think the first modern vice president, you know, who really had a sense of what to do with the office, you might say, was Nelson Rockefeller, who had that 2-year stint with Gerald Ford in the 1970s, and he basically functioned as a chief of staff for Ford. It was a useful role. It was an impactful role. You know, Walter Mondale had more of a hands-on policy role with Jimmy Carter. You know, you had George Bush Sr. with Ronald Reagan. In that case, Bush saw his role basically to be loyal at all costs and to position himself for a future shot at the presidency. Not sure if you could say much about Dan Quayle. You know, Al Gore was very involved with the Clinton White House. Dick Cheney took it to a whole new level where he carved out this massive sphere of influence, but also, you know, it was cloaked in so much secrecy. So we're still sort of, you know, sorting out exactly what the role was that Dick Cheney had in that White House, although that probably sets the standard in terms of singular power for a vice president. But I think in Biden, you know, what we see is we can see it publicly. We can see what he did and what he's been doing publicly, and he has been not a bystander in negotiations over you know, some of the whether it's the various fiscal fights that the White House has been having with Congress, this gun control task force. You know, this is not one of those, you know, blue ribbon DC commissions where I think they're going to submit a report and it's going to go gather dust and that's it. I mean, this is basically setting the agenda going forward for gun control for this administration and potentially for the Democratic Party, you know, for years to come. And you can even think of gay marriage, where I'm still not convinced that absent Joe Biden going on Meet the Press last year and endorsing gay marriage, that Obama would have come around on that before the 2012 election.
Well, consequential vice president, has a lot of the right stuff. He's run a few times with little fanfare or a few votes. Do you know if he still wants the job?
He clearly wants it. He clearly. And you know, that's true for a lot of people, I think, in politics at that level. It's just, you know, it's there. It's something they think about. In the case of a guy like Biden, who's run for it before, you know, he's, I guess the term, you know, is he's sort of playing with house money here, because mm-hmm. when he went and ran in 2008, he's completely overshadowed by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And even we've totally forgotten about him, but even John Edwards, he was completely overshadowed. He got about 1% in the Iowa caucuses, and that was the end of it. And I think Biden had this sense during that campaign that you know, his political career at that point spanned about 35 or 40 years. He honestly felt he had never been more ready to be president, more qualified to be president, more sure of what he would do as president, as he was in that 2008 campaign. And yet, he just could not get any traction. And that's the thing, when you're in the Senate for 30, for 40 years, you just kind of, you know, I think voters have this tendency to just look at you as, well, yeah, he's a lifer,
well,
he's part of the furniture,
right,
and all of that.
Well,
and
this is part of the thing, Steve. You know, he's been in the Senate for a long time. He's 70 now. He would be 73 during the campaign, 74 on inauguration. he's got the age thing running against him. And also, he's committed a lot of gaffes. Of course, you mentioned forcing the president's hand on gay marriage. Do people take Joe Biden seriously?
I think they do. I think the role he's played as vice president, having such a public and consequential role, I think really earning the trust of Obama, the respect of a lot of the people around Obama, I think the respect of a lot of people who support Obama, I think it's done him a world of good. And so we look back at 2008 and why he couldn't gain traction. I think there is a scenario where if he ran for president in 2016, he could gain traction sort of as the candidate of continuity, the guy who has been, this is the formula that worked for George Bush Sr. It's the formula that worked for Al Gore in 2000. It's the loyal vice president who has been there fighting the battles with the popular president. And he wants to kind of carry the torch going forward. The one wild card in all of this that was not a factor for George Bush Sr., it was not a factor for Al Gore, is Hillary Clinton could also make that case. She could make the, it's my turn to pick up the torch. I could be the candidate of continuity, and that really complicates things for Biden.
Well, Steve, we have just a minute left, and although we cannot resist the idea of a series of Chris Christie and Joe Biden debates, I'm sure those would be good material, but right now he is in a central role on some key policy decisions. Would his presidential aspirations influence his position on gun policy or fiscal policy?
I don't know about those two, but I do remember when he stepped out on gay marriage last year. One of the first thoughts I had, and other people wrote this as well, was this is an indication of a guy who's thinking a few years ahead. Because in the spring of 2012, there was a question of, well, is the Democratic Party really ready to embrace gay marriage right now? But there was no question that the Democratic Party was heading in that direction and would be there by 2014, would be there by 2016. And this was going to be a standard position that it was expected that presidential candidates for that party would be taking going forward. And so when he did that in the spring of 2012, it really did seem to me to be a move of a guy who was conscious of, hey, if I want to have a future in this party past 2012, this is where I need to be.
Steve Kornacki, thanks so much for your time.
Sure.
Steve Kornacki, political writer for Salon. You'll find a link to his article about Biden's viability as presidential candidate on our Facebook page. You can also watch Steve on MSNBC's The Cycle.